content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Jen Rogers for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Smithsonian. Smithsonian is generously supported by the Kepin family. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Smithsonian, the magazine of the Smithsonian Institute. On today's program, we'll start with an article titled Eyes of the Forest by Jay Cheshis. Sarah Flores spent decades crafting exquisite traditional textiles deep in the Peruvian Amazon. Now, at 75, she's becoming an unlikely art world star. Sarah Flores sat against the wall, flanked by family, in her traditional Shipibo Conibo wrap, skirt, and blouse. She was attending the opening this past spring of her solo show, Sarah Flores, Nonnete, A Dream for an Indigenous Nation. And she was overwhelmed with attention, swarmed by well-wishers. The exhibition was the first devoted to a contemporary Indigenous artist in the 64-year history of the Lima Art Museum, one of Peru's premier cultural institutions. The museum's permanent collection, spanning 3,000 years, includes Inca treasures and Spanish colonial masterworks, but virtually nothing at all from the Amazon region, where Flores, a member of the Shipibo Conibo community, lives and works. Now, Flores's hypnotic abstractions covered the gallery's walls, geometric labyrinths meticulously painted on stretched cotton fabric, using natural pigments she makes from plants she gathers from the rainforest. Some of the interlocking patterns were monochrome, others a riot of color, the optical effect almost electric. Before Flores entered her 60s, her name was almost entirely unknown outside her own community. Her work is steeped in the ancient Shipibo Conibo tradition of pattern making known as kenning. The art form is communal and typically anonymous. Historically, few practitioners signed their work. Kenning's unwritten rules and precise symmetric visual language have been passed down for generations along matrilineal lines. Most Shipibo Conibo art was long dismissed as folkloric by the cultural establishment. But in 2011, an Italian-born artist named Matteo Norzi came across Flores' work at a handicraft shop in Peru, and after years of trying to find her, he finally tracked her down in the jungle. He helped her secure her first public presentation in a 2018 group show with international artists in New York. That was a really important moment, because the work had not really been shown by anyone, Brett Littman, the show's curator, told me recently. And it was really good for Sarah, and it opened up her work to a lot of contemporary artists and curators. Flores' profile soared after that. Her work was shown in Paris, Miami, Madrid, and Hong Kong. Earlier this year, the Guggenheim Museum in New York acquired one of her pieces. The London gallery White Cube signed her in 2023 and began planning a big exhibition. Flores' lack of recognition in her own country began to seem like a glaring omission. There's been a lot of buzz around the work of Sarah lately, said Sharon Lerner, the director of the Lima Art Museum, but she never had shown in a museum in Peru. At the opening, John Alfredo Davis, an authority on Peruvian painting and textiles, and a longtime champion of Shipibo Conibo art, told me that he'd approached the museum about hosting a Shipibo Conibo exhibition more than 20 years earlier. They told us, folk art is never coming to this museum, ever, he recalled. But since that time, curators and collectors all over the world have sought to expand the definition of fine art. Indigenous art was a major focus at the last Venice Art Biennial in 2024. Flores, who turned 75 just before the Lima exhibit opened, now sat silently under a boom mic while collectors, patrons, and art writers circled the gallery, admiring her work. A documentary crew was capturing the moment on film. Norzi, who helped bring her work to the wider world, sat beside her, affectionately clutching her hand. The Italian agent, advocate, and art dealer is also her biographer. For the past 3 years, he and filmmaker Elia Gasulbalada have been chronicling Flores' journey for a documentary, The Hummingbird Paints Fragrant Songs, the title taken from a Shipibo Kunibo song. It's the story of a late bloom and the psychological implications, Norzi said of the film, which he's planning to release in 2026. And it's very much about taking a stand against the inevitable. Life passing, death, the destruction of the Amazon, you name it. Norzi's cameras followed Flores to New York, where she visited the United Nations with the elected leader of the Shipibo Kunibo, Lizardo Calper Pezo, for a discussion about indigenous approaches to conservation. They followed the diminutive artist to the Brooklyn Museum for a Dior fashion show, capturing Flores as a wide-eyed outsider taking in the glitz and glamour. By then, she'd become an unlikely addition to the Dior payroll, as one of the 11 contemporary artists invited to reimagine the iconic Lady Dior handbag, best known for its association with Princess Diana. Flores added her own black and white Kenne design to a pair of limited edition models, medium size priced at more than $22,000 and a mini size priced at more than $19,000. Both sold out quickly. Prices for Flores' textile work, meanwhile, recently exceeded $100,000, a remarkable achievement for an indigenous artist from the Amazon. This past summer, she was chosen to represent her country at the next Venice Biennale, opening in May 2026. A striking scene in the film captures Flores on her first flight to Europe, sipping champagne in a business class seat as she soars over the Atlantic for a gallery show in Paris. "My work took me far," she says, reflecting on the change in her life. "I arrived at faraway places, places I never thought I'd reach." Flores still lives modestly, as she always has. A few days before the Lima show opened, I visited her at home in Yarina Cocha, the main indigenous precinct of Huilcapa, the second largest city in the Peruvian Amazon. Cut from the jungle along the Ucayali River, the city emerged during a rubber boom more than a century ago. Flores lives in a muddy compound where three generations, five families, are packed into a dense collection of homes. When I visited the compound, Flores' pet tamarin, Aminish, clung to her head as she bent over her cotton canvas, known as a tocuyo. She was hard at work, her weathered hands stained red from pigment she pried from achiote pods piled in a stack on the dirt floor. Her daughters, Desi and Pilar Ramirez, sat beside her, filling in blank geometric patterns. Flores looked on approvingly. "So that it doesn't look empty, you have to fill it in," she said of the designs. "When you fill it in, everything looks complete, more beautiful." Traditional Shipibo Kunibo art making is collaborative, family work. Flores' daughters and granddaughters play a role in what they call Mama Sarah's art. Some might one day build their own reputations as artists. "We're born with the knowledge we're going to make art," Daisy, her younger daughter, told me. "We say it's in our blood. It's in our hands. Mama Sarah is like a guide." The Shipibo and the Kunibo were once two distinct tribes that merged over time to become one of the largest indigenous groups in the Peruvian Amazon. Their territory spread across nearly 20 million acres of dense jungle, resisting waves of Inca and Spanish invasion. The culture developed its own rich mythology, deeply rooted in the harsh jungle environment, and in blurred perceptions of the real and supernatural worlds. Kenne was central to Shipibo Kunibo life, a sacred and decorative art form imbued with magic. Patterns were etched, painted, and sewn on clothing, jewelry, pottery, and wood buildings. There was even Kenne as ceremonial body paint. The people believe the patterns had the power to heal. and they told stories in an esoteric visual language that anthropologists have worked to decipher. The approach to symmetrical designs, one of the most complex functioning art styles in the Aboriginal New World, as the anthropologist Peter Rowe described them in 1979, draws inspiration from patterns in nature, rippling across snake skins, fish heads, and tropical plants. The Shipibo Konibo believe that all patterns in the world reside on one magical creature, the cosmic serpent, the great world boa or ronin, as they call it. Kene artists often use recurring motifs, with stylistic differences that sometimes vary from one village to the next. Upriver tends to be more curvilinear, and downriver more rectilinear, says Peter Kepping, a former dealer in Shipibo Konibo art, who spent many years buying work along the Ucayali River. There are two complementary aspects to Kene. The craft side, menin, learned by watching and honed through years of practice, and the creative side, shinan, particular to every practitioner. Typically, work begins without preliminary sketching or advanced planning, pouring out in a rush of inspiration. From the moment she was born in a remote village in the Amazon, Flores seemed destined to make art. Her Shipibo Konibo name, Soy Biri, which loosely translates as well-drawn, foreshadowed her future. When she was a child, her grandmother used to rub leaves from the Ipo Kene plant on Flores's eyelids, as if she might transfer their lattice patterns onto her granddaughter's soul. From that moment on, I would look up at the mosquito net and see the designs, Flores said in conversation filmed by Norzi's team. In my mind, I'd say, this is Kene. Like her daughters, Flores began her art education along her mother, Virginia Valera Sananciso. She learned which plants to collect and process into pigments. Along with achiote for her reds and turmeric root for her yellows, she cut bark from three different trees to produce a brown dye that turned black when you applied a clay solution to the cotton canvas. My mother used to tell me, keep practicing. That's how you will learn, Flores said. Kene is our custom, our design. We don't learn it any other way. It comes from the mind. When you see how to make kene, you just paint. You trace the drawing, the design, because you already have it in your head. When Flores was a child, her mother didn't sell her own art. She only made clothing for our personal use, Flores said. That changed when Flores was 8 years old and her mother fell gravely ill. To seek treatment, they moved from their small village, Pauyan, 6 hours downriver, to Pucallpa, where they settled on a Shipibo Konibo encampment on the grounds of a newly established regional hospital. Valera Sanasino was diagnosed with tuberculosis. To support the family, Flores helped her mother make decorative work that might appeal to foreign clients. They painted on the same white cotton fabric that covered hospital beds, selling the textiles to the German hospital director's wife and to occasional tourists. At 16, Flores had an arranged marriage to Julio Ramirez Soria, a 23-year-old Shipibo Konibo man who was just back from a stint in the army. After the wedding, Flores sat down with her new father-in-law, a shaman. He drank ayahuasca, she recalled. And he told me, I'm going to look at you and I'm going to give you a crown, a Kene crown. You're going to have that crown. That crown will serve you for the rest of your life. Thanks to him, I guess I don't need any model. I don't look at any sketchbook, nothing. I just lay the fabric and there it appears. Flores and Ramirez Soria had 4 children, 2 girls and 2 boys. Working with a team of cartographers for the oil industry, Ramirez Soria would disappear into the jungle for months at a time. Flores helped keep food on the table by traveling between Pucallpa and Pauyan and selling her textile work. In the 1970s, she met a British expat named Carolyn Heath, who had a profound impact on her life as an artist. Heath had been working with Shipibo Kanibo Communities to develop an indigenous art cooperative, the first in the Peruvian Amazon. They called it Maroti Shobo, a place for buying and selling, pooling their resources to raise prices and reach new clientele. Everybody agreed Sarah was the best painter in the region, Heath recalled from her current home in Oxford. Flores began selling her work through the cooperative, which set up a showroom in Yarinacocha that's still open today. Her husband became involved both with the cooperative and with Heath herself. As he helped collect work from up and down the river, he and Heath began a relationship and had twins together. Shipibo Kanibo culture is historically polygynous, though the practice is less common today. At the time, nobody was signing their kene work. At Heath's suggestion, Flores began adding her initials, SVF, for Sarah Flores Valera, to her textiles. Some of that work eventually reached a shop selling handicrafts from across the Amazon in the affluent Barracano section of Lima. That's where Norzi initially encountered her art, while rifling through a stack of textiles on his first trip to Peru. Struck by the precision, the quality of the natural dyes, the inventiveness, and the optical quality, he paid $90 or so for his first Flores piece. When he asked the shop owner about the initials in the corner, she shared little information. She was telling me, actually, she doesn't paint anymore, he recalled. She didn't want to tell me the source. She wanted to keep Sarah to herself. Norzi spent the next 5 years consumed with tracking her down. Eventually, a local filmmaker and activist named Ronald Suarez helped him trace the initials SVF to Flores' front door. Norzi showed up at the compound in 2016. I remember my brother said, Mama, there's a very big man here to see you, a gringo. Daisy recalled the day he strolled into their lives. It was a Sunday in September. He said, oh, you are Sarah. I've been trying so hard to find you. He asked Flores how much she charged for the fabric she was painting. She told him $30, or its equivalent in Peruvian soles. And I said, Sarah, look, I won't give you $30. I will give you $1,000, Norzi recalled. But you need to sell them all to me only. And then I started to explain why. And she was understanding of my theory that I had to control the price to lift it up, present it in a different way. Norzi had been inspired by a book about Australia's Aboriginal art that described how a few art world players had helped reposition the traditional form in public consciousness. What had once been ethnographic art, shown only in natural history museums, migrated to the contemporary art scene, with specific artists earning renown. Norzi helped to accomplish the same thing for Shipibo Kanibo art. Together, they reached an agreement. As Norzi sold Flores' work on the art market, 25% of the income would go directly to Flores. 25% would go to support her daughters as they taught the art to other local girls. And 25% would go to indigenous groups, including a community-led core of 300 centuries, who patrol Shipibo Kanibo lands, protecting them from logging, fishing, and other illegal outsider activity. The final 25% would go to a new nonprofit organization that would support advocacy and legal aid for Shipibo Kanibo artists. Shortly after his first meeting with Flores, Norzi opened the Shipibo Kanibo Center with an office in Pulcalpa and headquarters in New York. The center went on to add two other artists from Pulcalpa, ceramicist Celia Vasquez Uy and rapper Whitner Fago. Flores' first show overseas soon followed in 2022 in New York. As Flores' art has reached new audiences, it's begun to change. Her cotton canvases have grown larger, her designs more intricate. She keeps on evolving, Norzi said. Just because of the demand, she started expanding in complexity and bringing the medium forward. She introduced a new plant motif, a vine with green leaves, that became her signature. It was inspired by visions from an ayahuasca experience. The plant-based concentrate is an important part of the indigenous rainforest culture, traditionally used by shamans. Flores has taken the hallucinogen only a few times. but it has influenced the way she creates art. The visions come to you like a movie. You're watching, and the leaves appear, she said. The leaves let you know this work is from the Amazon. Today, the quarter of the proceeds that Flora sets aside to protect her people is helping fund the Shipibo Kanibo Xitibo Council, a political body pushing for greater autonomy. Current estimates place the number of Shipibo Kanibo people between 25,000 and 35,000, many of whom live under the threat of industry incursions and eviction. Illegal coca leaf plantations and timber poaching encroach on the area where they live. By the time Flores' museum show opened in Lima, funds from her artwork were also supporting a legal assistance program for her people. The opening itself turned into a political and cultural showcase for the Shipibo Kanibo, who sent a full delegation to the city, including their elected leader, Cowper Pezo, and a musical group that performed on the museum steps. Inside the gallery, a flag Flores designed for the dreamed-of Shipibo Kanibo Nation hung from the ceiling, two interconnected shapes on earth-toned fabric, woven through with kene patterns. On a video monitor in the center of the room, Flores spoke about threats to the Peruvian rainforest that was so integral to her life and work. As artists, we know which plants are good to prepare the dyes, she said in deliberative Spanish. The tree I'm looking for, its bark is named Yunshin. It has a spirit of strength. To not kill the tree, we don't take all its bark at once. You always need to leave some on so it can grow back. Timber companies cut the trees, take them to the sawmill, and there they just slice them into planks. They discard the bark, but it is very useful for us. In the years since she and Norsi met, they have grown so close that he's become like an adoptive son. He advises her on finances and health issues. When her vision began failing, he arranged cataract surgery. A few years ago, they launched a new project together, launching a nonprofit cultural center on the former ayahuasca retreat in the Amazon. The center, known as Bakish Mai, focuses on preserving traditional knowledge now the oral transmission is vanishing as more Shipibo Kanibo people move to cities and assimilate. We must not abandon our customs, said Flores. Even if we no longer wear patterned embroidered skirts, our customs and our designs are in our minds, and we live with them. People from other places buy these designs. They buy cloth and hang it where they sleep so they can contemplate its beauty. Sometimes our cloths with designs are like medicine. The center offers workshops on art, ancestral agriculture, and plant medicine to the surrounding communities. Its name refers to the fluid concept of time among the Shipibo Kanibo. Bakish means both yesterday and tomorrow, Norsi explained. Mai means land. The overall goal, he said, is using the ancestral past to inspire the future. Dark storm clouds loomed late one morning as we set out in a big group to spend a few days at the center. Flores and her family, Norsi and his 6-person film crew. That spring had been the heaviest recorded raining season in more than a decade. The Ucayali River had risen above its banks. Up and down the river, homes had been lost. Muddy roads connecting networks of villages were entirely flooded. From the Flores family compound, so far undamaged by the deluge, we piled into a caravan of sputtering tuk-tuks, the preferred mode of transport in the region. Honda motorbikes welded to passenger carriages. Dirt roads gave way to muddy tracks. Those paths soon became streams, though they were shallow enough to drive through without getting stuck. At the edge of the Ucayali, we transferred our bags to wooden canoes propelled by rusty motors. We navigated gently upriver and then across it, cutting through tall reeds buzzing with mosquitoes and dragonflies. The trees along the water's edge were thronged with large white birds. In the black depths hid piranhas, caimans, river dolphins, and paiches, the enormous meaty fish that are a staple of the Amazonian diet. Eventually, Bakish Mai appeared through the reeds, a collection of thatched-roofed bungalows along the shoreline. Our accommodations for the next few days, sparsely furnished with mosquito nets hung over bare beds and cold water showers. As the river encroached, some could be reached only by walking across suspended wood planks. A few were entirely flooded. Norsi, who trained as an architect in Italy, has been overseeing renovations with plans to eventually add solar power. For now, only the communal dining hall had power, fed by a generator running solely at night. I huddled there with Flores after lunch one afternoon. Her husband, daughters, and granddaughters gathered in a circle around her. The night before, we'd all been together deep in the forest in a ceremonial space as a shaman lit candles that surrounded him on the wood floor. Flores refrained from drinking ayahuasca that night, but she crouched in front of the shaman, whispering out of earshot, seeking advice. In the dining hall, I asked her what they had discussed. I told him that my body, my spirit, my energy felt off, she said. I asked him what he saw in my energy. I was worried about it. And what did the shaman say, I asked. These days my brain is not working that well. I'm 75 years old. There's so much I can't remember, she said. I can't remember what he told me, so I'm asking my daughter. Desi chimed in. He said not to worry about the future. You have so many people supporting you. Everything is going to be okay. A conflict with another artist, and Irina Kocha, had been weighing on her. I'm worried not about what people say, but what people do, Flores said. I have neighbors who are jealous of my success. I worry about a shaman sending me bad energy. I ask myself, why should I worry when I have so many friends, family members supporting me? And Mateo, I'm so thankful for Mateo. Since I met Mateo, I have been very happy. As we sat talking, she handed me a green leaf with red veins from the Ipokene plant, the same leaf her grandmother had once rubbed on her eyelids to bring out visions of Kene, plucked from the jungle around us. Hold it in the palm of your hand to improve your writing, she instructed, to make yourself stronger, so you will write good things. We've run out of time for today's episode of Smithsonian, generously underwritten by the Kepin family. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Smithsonian is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.